Been advertised by Rabbi Zon's organization as Team Shabbos, which apparently stands for Traditional End of Life Awareness Movement Shabbos, which is, I guess, more cheerful than calling it End of Life Shabbos. So apparently there are 400 shuls around the country participating in Team Shabbos, and I guess we can be the 401st if we talk about a related topic. So the topic for this evening's discussion is autopsies in Halacha, which is nominally connected to Parshas HaShavua, in as much as the first significant shuv on the topic is that of the Noda B'Yehuda, as we'll discuss in a few moments. And the Shoel in the Noda B'Yehuda points to the Chanata of Yaakov Avinu and of Yosef as perhaps being precedent for allowing autopsies under certain circumstances. It's questionable why that should be so, but that's at least enough of a reason to allow us to discuss the topic this evening. The sugya of note that's relevant to this topic is the Gemara in Bava Basra, beginning on Daf Kuf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, which you have in the Mar Mekom Lasir. The Gemara records on the bottom, Maisa b'bnei Brak, v'echad shemacher ben nichsei aviv umei. So there is an episode that happened once in B'nai Brak of someone who sold the property of his father, and then he himself died. The son died. Uba b'nei Mishpacha, and other members of the family came, the iru lomar, and then they created an error. They complained that this son who sold his father's estate was katan haya b'shas misa, that he was a katan, and therefore he wasn't authorized to make the mechira. Uba'u v'shalu as Rabbi Akiva, and they came and asked Rabbi Akiva the following shayla, mahu libodko, are you allowed to exhume the body and check whether he was indeed a katan or not? Amar lehem I atem rasham l'navlo, you're not allowed to be menavel, you're not allowed to do that to the mace. The ode, Siman Maslin Lishan Sakamisa. Even if you were, it sounds like, it wouldn't necessarily help because the appearance sometime after passing is not necessarily reflective of the appearance at the time of passing, so he may now look like a gadol, even if at the time of Misa he was really a katan. And then the Gemara has a back and forth as to who's considered the muksak in this situation. Are the Yorshim the muksak, or are the Lukuchos, the people who bought the property from the son, the muksakim? And then the Gemara concludes, after the back and forth of the Shaka Vitari again, towards the end of the boxed out area. The Gemara says, Hachi Kamerlu, this was Rabbi Akiva's response. Chada diatam resham lenav, you're not allowed to be menavel the mace. Ve'od v'chitem uzuzi shakel. So maybe he'll say, look, he took money that belongs to us. Linavel v'linavel. So in order to protect us from loss, in order to shield our assets, in order to protect us from monetary loss, maybe we're allowed to be menavel. No, siyamad masiyin lishanos achamisa. It wouldn't help because it wouldn't draw any conclusive. It would not be sufficient evidence to conclude as to whether he was a katan or not bishas misa. Okay, so look at Tosas here. Tosas di ramaskul zuzi avinan linavel vilinavel. So the Gemara seems to say there are two considerations. Number one, there's a problem with nivel. Maybe under certain circumstances we could countenance nivel, but here it wouldn't help. So Tosas writes, Aval Yorshim Einam Rasha'im Lenavlo Bishvil Hayirusha Delo Midiyavi. So the Yorshim would not be allowed to violate nivel hames in order to gain the Yerusha, because under these circumstances, based on who's considered the Muksak, they're not coming to any financial loss. So being menavel emes won't prevent financial loss. Ve'od shukrovam. And it sounds like even if it would prevent financial loss, there's a special responsibility that Yorshim have, a heightened responsibility to not be menavel the emes. So Tosa seems to entertain that under certain circumstances, if there was a potential demonstrated loss, perhaps there would be grounds to exhume the body, but that wouldn't be true for the Yorshim. The Yorshim, under all circumstances, even if there's potential financial loss, would not be allowed to violate this Isser of Nivel Hames. Okay?
What does Lomi
Diyavi
mean?
Lomi Diyavi means they're not literally not giving anything, but it means in context that they're not losing anything. That there's no financial loss incurred. Yeah, they may not gain something that they otherwise could get, but they're not losing their current assets. Okay.
If the place of chitemra is
a possible objection to the first reason, because the Gemara seems to say that even by itself, it should have stood. The first reason by itself is you can't be Mavol.
Maybe there is a taina. Maybe you could be menavel under certain circumstances, but here siyamanam siyamu shanos wouldn't help.
Right. So Tosfos winds up saying that lekuchos maybe they could.
Right.
Right. Even though one could read this gemara to say that maybe you never could, even lekuchos couldn't.
Correct. So Tosfos is saying no, that if as long as we're not talking about the yorshim, other people
would be potentially
allowed to do it if there's the potential of loss. Okay. The other relevant gemara to this discussion is the gemara in Chulin Daf Yud Aleph. That's the whole blad over there that discusses how do we know Rov Min HaTorah. So one of the gemara's attempted rayas to establish how we know the concept of Rov Min HaTorah is the fact that we kill someone who's Chayiv Misa. Reuven kills Shimon, and then we kill Reuven for killing Shimon. But maybe Shimon was a treifa. How do we know that Reuven is really Chayiv for killing Shimon, and we're going to kill him anyway? So the Gemara wants the proof in there that we rely on Rov. The Gemara says, well, maybe we should check the guy. Maybe we should check the mace to see whether he really was a treif or not. The Gemara says, no, that would be a violation of Nivel. We're not going to be menavel the mace in order to save the person that killed him. The Gemara says, maybe we should. V'chi teima mishim asalos nefashos, we should be menavel the mace to save the guy that we're going to meet at Mises Bazin to. The Gemara says, no, it wouldn't be a conclusive proof, because maybe B'makom Nek Sayif Nakov, maybe the place where he killed him, where he put him the sword, is the place where the treifa was, you wouldn't be able to figure it out anyway. So the Gemara here again seems to assume that in principle, perhaps at least for ourselves and the Foshos, there would be grounds for Nivel and Mace if it would lead to a conclusive decision. But you also see from this Gemara, and Zacharana point out, in the context of determining what's considered Rov in a Torah, the Gemara invokes Nivel HaMeis, so it's clear that Nivel HaMeis is a Din D'oraisa. What's a Din D'oraisa? Yosef Engel suggests in one place that maybe it's somewhat subsumed under the Yisr of Halanas HaMeis. So that's not like you're not allowed to leave over a Meis and not bury him until the next morning or overnight, because that's a violation of Kavod HaMeis, Kikil Asa L'Kim Taloi, so maybe this is an extension of that Yisr.
So what about organ donation?
Would that be so we'll talk about under what circumstances perhaps it would be justified if it's going to save someone else's life. Okay. So this is quoted lahalacha in two different contexts. Take a look in Choshe Mishpat Simen Kuf Zayin, the Ramah in Sif Beis, a little bit later on in the Mar Mekamos. So there the Ramah quotes a Hagos Ashri, quoting from an Or Zeruah and other Rishonim, that Reuven Shayachai L'Shimon Umeis Reuven. So Reuven owed money to Shimon, and then Reuven died. Yachal Shimon L'Akev Kfuraso. Shimon can prevent the Kfura from taking place at Sheyifrulo until he gets paid back. However, v'im Shimon Krova Sheruvein, v'deim Mishpacha Mochen Biyazer Shelol Akek Rasa Shelol Navla. But if they're related, so then you're not allowed to prevent the burial because of the violation of Nivel HaMeis. So here you see also the connection between Nivel HaMeis and Halanos HaMeis. And also, this Hagos Ashi V'Shem Or Zeruah seems to be working with Tosis's presumption that there is a heightened responsibility for preventing Nivel HaMeis on the part of the Krovim, more so than on the part of a third party. And then we also have this in Yaradei, in Hilchas Avelos, Simen Shin Samach Gimel Siv Zayin, Shin Samach Gimel Siv Zayin. Asur Liftoach HaKever Acher Shinista Magolel, you're not allowed to reopen the grave after the person's buried. Afilim Orim Ayorshim Lefaskol Kedei Livdokim Hevishdei Saris, even if the Yorshim want to check whether he was a Gadol or not. So in the Piskei Shuvi here, Simchat and Zayin, he quotes a back and forth between the Tshuva Me'ava, the Talmud Mufak of the Nodav Yehuda, and the Shiva Sion of the Nodav Yehuda's son, about the following case. I don't know if this is where Agnon got his story from, but a similar storyline, where there was a Igun Shaila of a husband who was presumed to have died, but and there was a body, But they weren't sure whether this body corresponded to the missing husband, and the person was buried. And then the wife came along and said, I have simanim muvhakim, I could identify whether this person was my husband or not, because he had certain signs on the body that were very obvious. So the question was, were they allowed to exhume the body in order to save this woman, mechav le'igun, from being in a situation of being unable to remarry, because she didn't know whether her husband was dead. So the Tshuva Me'ava assumed that you should be matir, that this would be permissible, because Rabbi Akiva doesn't dismiss out of hand the possibility of violating Nivul Hameis by exhuming the body where there's a strong tzarach in his particular case. So that was the two answers in the Gemara, that it wouldn't have been conclusive and there wasn't a sufficient tzarach. But if there is a sufficient tzarach, and being matir, being matzil, a woman from Igun is definitely a sufficient tzarach, then it should be permissible. And he quotes a Yeshiva Sion here, who wasn't so convinced. And part of what he argues is that who is going to exhume the body? Presumably not the woman, because that's not usually something that you leave to women to do. So maybe you could argue she's going to exhume the body, so she has a right to do so to save herself. But who's to say, chatei b'shvil shavtisko chaverka, what allows someone else to be manavel the body to save another woman? So that's one of his arguments against the Tshuva Me'ava, and there's some representation that the Tshuva Me'ava actually was choser. Okay, and what about autopsy? So the famous original Tshuva is out of the Noda Behuda in Madura Tinyana Yaradeya Simen Reish Yud. The Noda Behuda was asked by someone in London, apparently. There was a situation of someone who had an illness that sounds like kidney stones, Evan Bukiso. And the doctors performed some kind of medical procedure, and then he died. And they wanted to determine what the cause of death was to see whether this medical procedure was appropriate to potentially give them more knowledge as to how to treat similar situations down the road.
Which year is this?
Which year
was the Shabbos
post? Doesn't have a year. The Noda Behuda lived from the early 1700s to the late 1700s. But the tshuva, so far as I can tell, is not dated. Okay, so that was the shaila that the Noda Behuda was asked. Simin Reish Yud. So the Shoel, who asked him the question, wanted to be matir, and somehow we quoted the Chanita of Yaakov Avinu as a Rayel, so the Noda Behuda wasn't quite sure what he meant by that. The Noda Behuda's basic conclusion is that it is true that if you have a real situation of Sakanos Nefashos, or Suffix Sakanos Nefashos, then there's what to be matir Nivul Hameis, and potentially performing an autopsy. But the Noda Behuda's analysis here is that it's not considered Chol Lefanenu. It's if there was another person with this illness right in front of us, so then you could justify being nateach the first mace in order to give you the knowledge to treat the second one. But it was only a theoretical possibility that this knowledge may help you down the road treating someone else who's not lefaneinu, who's not sick at the moment. So that's too far removed to justify. And he seems to be worried about a slippery slope. So then they'll be menatech everyone in order to have a better understanding of the human body, to treat others, and that is clearly usher.
What about if there's other people in society that have Evan Bekise? So it's not in front of you, but they are right now the fun of it with
yeah,
us.
So that's the Chazon Ish's argument. If you look in, again, the Noda Behuda is writing in the 1700s when if someone's sick in London, they're not going to gain anything in Prague based on what happened in London. But if you look in the Chazon Ish on the last page here, Yerodei Simon Reish Ches Ozayin, the Chazon Ish is Mitzayim is Noda Behuda, which is quoted in the Pitzkei Tshuva there in Yerodei. And he says, the chiluk isn't really or shouldn't be whether Lemaisa there's another chola in front of us physically or not. Ella im matzay adavar debizman shemasriin Allah mishem choli ma'alechas havaleka oivim shitzar biyira samach l'sfar. So just like you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos if you have an army that's coming to besiege the city, even if they haven't come in yet, because they're right there. So if there's a situation where the illness exists right now, and there's some connection between the place where you are and the place where the illness is, so then that could be an extension of Chol Lefaneinu, and that could be permissible as well. The Chasam Sofer in Yerodei Simin Shin Lamed Vav basically echoes the Noda Behuda's concern. He says, if you're going to argue that this is considered Pikuach Nefesh to allow for an autopsy because maybe it'll give you more of a sense as to how to treat someone down the road, so then you can also argue by the same token that you can go to medical school on Shabbos. You can learn Refuah and be Mechal Shabbos because that'll give you more insight into healing people in the future. The Chasam Sofer there raises another issue that aside from Nivel Ameis, there could be a problem of Hanam and Ameis. You're not allowed to be Nana from Ameis. So you have to figure out, is this considered Hanah? How do you quantify Hanah? So that's the discussion in the later poskim, how we define Hanah in this kind of a context. Okay. There's a correspondence between the Binyan Sion and the Maram Shik, which we have in Binyan Sion, Simon Kuf Ayin and Kuf Ayin Aleph. The question the Binyan Sion is addressing is basically the Shaila of the Noda Behuda, a slightly different permutation, whether you're allowed to perform an autopsy to give you better knowledge to treat a medical condition down the road. And he suggests another argument. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Samech, has the famous sugya, Maso Atma B'Maman Chavera. Are you allowed to save yourself by destroying someone else's property in the process? So there's a famous and perplexing Shitas Rashi over there that you're not allowed to be Maso Atma B'Maman Chavera, that you should rather die than save yourself by using someone else's property. Tosis argues, but that's the question of how seriously Rashi means that. But there is such a position, at least face value, that you're not allowed to be matzil atmo b'mamon chavera. And even according to other Rishonim, you can only do it if you're going to pay it back. Fine. So he says, if you're not allowed to be matzil atmo b'mamon chavera, so kol shekein, you're not allowed to be matzil atmo b'klon chavera, b'bizayon chavera. So what license do you have to save someone else if you're going to be violating the nivel ameis of a mace? Okay. Moshe has a tshuva. Igros Moshe, Chelek, Beis, Yerodea, Simen Kufnun Aleph, tshuva written to Rabbi Tendler on this topic. Moshe argues that even if in theory you might have viewed this as some form of Sorach HaCholi, some form of Pikuach Nefesh, he says it's difficult to be matur on that basis. Why? He says as follows, that there's no obligation for an individual to learn medicine. So maybe he should have said that everyone should become a doctor because we have an obligation to save lives. So everyone should go to medical school so that they could become doctors so that they could save lives. So no one would say that there's an obligation upon every person to learn medicine in order to save lives. If someone learned medicine, and if someone is a doctor and is capable of saving lives, then he has an obligation to do so. But there's no obligation to become a doctor in order to save lives. Just like there's no obligation to become a philanthropist in order to give tzedakah, or to become rich. It's if you happen to become rich and have a lot of money, then you should give tzedakah. But there's no obligation to become rich in order to have a lot of money to give tzedakah.
Would there be an obligation to learn BLS?
To what?
Learn basic life support. BLS. When somebody has a problem with choking, you just right. Do CPR.
Right.
So you learn how to do it.
Okay.
So would there be a chiyuv for the sound person to know how to do it? That way, you never know.
I don't know. Might be a good idea, but it's probably difficult to argue it's a chiyuv. He says also, you're not necessarily obligated to learn how to swim, but if you know how to swim and someone's drowning, then you should save them.
Your father's supposed to teach you how to swim.
Okay, so he says, if that's the case, so then by the same token, there's no justification to perform an autopsy in order to give you more knowledge about medicine, just like there's no obligation to become a doctor in order to cure other people. He says, "V'chein af shetam anod b'yehuda delo dachina nisurim mishum chashash akal lezu shemi yizdam in chola hu tam dachuk." So the Nod B'Yehuda reason himself for chola fanenu, so maybe you don't buy into that. The Masi cholam alma, there are always people who are sick, so that knowledge should be able to save someone else. Especially nowadays that we're all interconnected, and one hospital here will communicate with another hospital there. But nevertheless, there's no chiyuv to be lomid refuah, there's no chiyuv to be menavel hames. And Moshe does concede that maybe if it's a very small incision, a biopsy, you put in a needle of some sort, that would be mutter, because that's the kind of procedure that you would do on someone living. So he assumes that any procedure that you would do on someone living, you could do on a mace, and that's not a violation of nivel hames. So if you insert a needle into someone alive, you could insert a needle into a mace to do some kind of test or biopsy if that would get you any relevant information.
What about doing an MRI or a CAT scan on the mace to determine cause of death? You're not doing an incision, though. You're taking, digital imaging.
So where there's a tzorach, there's probably more grounds to allow for that than a standard autopsy. There's an interesting tshuva that Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer, in one tshuva about autopsies in general, Chela Dalet Simin Yudalet, he has pages and pages in which he quotes all the classic marmakomos, which are generally lechumra unless it's a very specific toelis. And then in the end, he suddenly is makel, extremely makel. So I don't know what happened between the conclusion and what happened before that. I'm not sure. But there's another interesting tshuva that Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Yudalet Simen Pei Gimel. In the late 70s, he was asked by one of the doctors in Shari Tzedek whether it was permissible to remove a pacemaker from a deceased patient because they apparently wanted to reuse pacemakers because they were expensive, and the argument was that if it was a good pacemaker, they'd be losing a lot of money by burying it, and funds are tight, and maybe they wouldn't be able to save someone else if they don't have that ability. I asked a cardiologist, no one reuses pacemakers these days. I don't know if anyone reused pacemakers in America 40 years ago, but in Shari Tzedek, apparently they did. So based on the presentation of the Shaila, that Tzitz Eliezer was willing to be makel where there's a significant financial component and where there's a concern that if you don't allow it, then maybe they're not going to be able to treat everyone that they're supposed to treat. He says, as far as the Isser of Hanam and Ames, the Machlokes Rishonim, whether Seyar is considered the Chlavi Isser of Hana Min Ames. So hair is not as fundamental a part of the body as limbs. That's the Machlokes Rishonim. We pass in the Shulchan Aruch that hair also is Aser Bana. But he says maybe you can rely on the minority opinion we've shown him, the opinion we don't paskin like, that there's no isur or na in something that's not really part of the makeup of the body, and therefore there wouldn't be an isur or na for a pacemaker which was inserted into a body, because that's not that's more analogous to sayar. Fine. And then he says that he makes the following suggestion, that in order to avoid all problems, he raises the question, maybe there's an assumption when they implanted the pacemaker that the person was Conan, became his. So what right do you have to take it away from him? So he suggests that they should make a tenai when they insert a pacemaker, that it's only on loan. And in the event that he passes away and is still usable, they're going to take it out. Because then anyway, it could be that if you're mochel and evil amazed, maybe there's something to that. So between dealing with the Kenyan issue and dealing with the Mechila issue, he thinks that's the best solution to avoid this problem. But again, this is more theoretical than practical, at least in today's day and age.
And without that tznai, the assumption would be that it belonged to the mace himself or it belonged to the yorshim? I mean, what's
it? Well, it belongs to the mace and then becomes the property of the yorshim. He says that if you, the din is that there's no iser v'anam in a mace if the mace stipulates that certain things could go to the yorshim, like sayar and the like. Mm-hmm. He says even if push comes to shove, even if they didn't make the tznai, you could probably still take it. The bottom line, the general consensus of poskim, starting from the Noda Behuda with different variations, is that under certain extreme circumstances of the real Chalul Lefaneinu, there may be grounds to be makel to allow for an autopsy, but under most circumstances, it's questionable and should be avoided.
So going back to my question, though, is a big problem with the Eliezer. Alright, so certainly taking out a kidney or taking out.
So if it's like salas nefasha, so then that would be mutter.
Yeah, but so taking a pacemaker, salas nefasha, the person needs a pacemaker. What's the difference between a pacemaker?
If that's the case, meaning, so the tzitzel yezer, current medical practice is not to reinsert pacemakers. But if you're talking about it, that was part of his argument, that if you're talking about a time where, again, in Shari Tzedek, in 1978, they weren't saying that if you don't take out this pacemaker, you won't have another one for the other guy. It's a very amorphous judgment that there's certain financial considerations. You couldn't say that one more or less pacemaker here is going to make the difference. It's part of a broader, more difficult to define calculus. But in principle, if you could demonstrate that this is going to save a life, so then it should be mutter. Even Safek Kassals the Fashas the Mutter.
So if there's a kidney registry, and so you have a car accident patient, and so, but there's a registry, so is that considered to be Lefanov? In other words, the next person on the list needs to have a transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So do we say, okay, maybe it's two towns over or the next town over?
I think that? Everyone would agree that
yeah.
that's.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Rabbi Thomas Orthodox that.